low win rates, excessive discounting, challenging negotiations. Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group. We're an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. This podcast is about one question: how to transform your team into peak performers. If you want the answer, keep listening. If you want it faster, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.
Really thrilled to have this discussion. And, you know, it's been one that has been top of mind for us over the last few months. And it seems like it just continues to gain momentum as we went from an immediate kind of, what do we do in the short term? I'm thinking back as far as, you know, end of February, March, as we were thinking about access getting shut down. And we had to pivot pretty quickly and kind of scramble as we were having conversations with our clients. And now, frankly, it's becoming a little bit more of the new normal. And even as we're looking out over the next 6 to 12 months, I know that we are looking at, and our clients are looking hard at, what does this world of virtual selling look like? How do we optimize that and even perform at a higher level using the virtual technologies? And what are clients doing that are really pushing the envelope, that are really making having a success? And today we have a great panel of individuals from different organizations with different types of products, but in the medical and pharma space to share some of their best practices. And I was really struck as I was going through the profiles of our panelists today to look that everybody has background both selling, managing, and then in some sort of training or leadership development or performance development capacity. So we really have a wealth of experience across the panel today. What I'd like to do to get us started is just have each of them introduce a little bit about themselves, their company, and their sales organization. So that'll give us the context for each of them. And then we have some questions. And we're not going to do this as a formal presentation mode with a lot of slides. We're going to do it more as a conversation. So we have some questions about how they're adapting, how they're leveraging virtual, what their top performers are doing differently. And we just want to have a conversation around that. We'll also have an opportunity to get feedback from our audience today using both polling and chats as we ask questions of our panelists. Love to hear your ideas and thoughts as well. And we'll crowdsource some of the great ideas coming out of this, and love to be able to capture this in a blog going forward. So with that, I'm going to stop talking for a moment. And what I'd like to do is have each of the panelists introduce themselves. And Alistair, as Alonzo said, head of performance development at Alcon. I didn't realize until I reviewed your profile again, you've been at Alcon for 26 years in different capacities. Sorry if that lets everyone in on your secret here, but just a wealth of experience there in a number of different roles. So Alistair, maybe you can say a little bit about what you're doing now and about your sales organization and background there at Alcon.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks for the introduction, and Alonzo as well. And good afternoon, folks. Yeah, so I work for Alcon. I'm specifically in the surgical division. So we have two divisions in our device business. We have surgical and vision care. And I head up, as Ray already said, the performance development organization within surgical. And our organization, our sales organization, is basically about 350 sales folks and about 35 division managers within the organization. So that's the group that I work most closely with.
That's great. Well, and we'll come back and love to hear a little bit about how that organization is adapting and managing in these times. So thank you, Alistair. So Heather, wealth of experience both on the pharma, the sales leadership, and now running a division within Aerie, also a current former client of SRG, as all the panelists are today. So Heather, maybe you could say a little bit about your current role and sales organization at Aerie.
Yeah, and it's great to be here. Thanks so much for the invitation. I'm currently the regional director at Aerie Pharmaceuticals for the Northeast. And we commercialized two first-in-class glaucoma medications beginning in 2017. So I've been working feverishly. All of us have. We have a sales team of about 100 sales representatives and 14 district managers, 4 regionals. But it's all hands on deck at Aerie, and we're having a lot of fun. It's focused on glaucoma only, with these two first-in-class medications, first time in 20 years to have something new. So anxious to talk more about access and creative ideas, because we still have a lot of work to do as a startup company.
That's great. Well, and really fascinating to get that perspective as well. As we talk through this. John, again, welcome. And so John at Arjo and currently running up the Sales Academy and a number of different training initiatives for Asia, LATAM, Eastern Europe, and probably some other areas that I'm not aware of. But also a wealth of background going back through Abbott and Eli Lilly, and also similar paths to Novartis, as several of our panelists have. So I know you've been both in a sales management and now training capacity. John, maybe you could talk a little bit about your role at Arjo now, and also the sales organization.
Yes, thanks, Ray, and hi everyone. I work now for Arjo, which is a global medical technology company, and my role is looking after sales and service in that company. There's about 1,200 sales reps globally, including 300 service technicians that have a really strong customer-facing role, as well as our rental team that also have a customer-facing role. If you're not sure what Arjo is, I'll just explain a little bit. It's a medical technology company that focuses on improving the mobility of patients, and that's in acute care facilities as well as long-term care facilities. And prior to this wonderful role that I've got, I spent 17 years in pharma in sales management, and training roles. And just a little tip here. So any comment that I give, my boss is on the line today, so make me look good. Just give plenty of likes to anything that I say, and give some thumbs up. That makes me happy.
Absolutely.
It's a great meeting. And great meeting, everyone. I'll just say, I really love reading where people are from, because I start planning holidays during these as well, and think, oh, I wonder what that place is like. So thanks for sharing where you're from, everyone. I really appreciate it, and really looking forward to this.
No, appreciate you being here, John. And I will say, wanted to mention that John is joining us from Sydney, Australia. So it's bright and early on a Friday morning for him. But given the global nature of our audience and our clients, it's fantastic to have him join. And thanks for starting your day with us, John.
Best time of the day. This is the highlight.
Yeah,
All right. Well, you can tell us how Friday looks at the end.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's jump in. And one of the things we're going to do, we said we'd get some feedback from the audience. So I'm going to open up a poll here before we'll start the discussion. But what I'd like to do is hear from the audience, and the panelists can vote here as well. But we're going to do a before and during. So essentially, talking about access specifically, because that's always a concern with pharma and medical. How do we get access to our clients? How do we get access to the hospitals? And so what we're going to ask about is, how would you describe your level of access to physicians and healthcare professionals, HCPs, before COVID? So if we can think all the way back to January, right, if we can go back that far, did you have limited access or no access to those folks that you were trying to call on? Was it virtual only at that time, or did you have pretty much open access? And I'm going to go ahead and launch this and love to see what our audience said. Back before we were quarantining and we had to shut things down, what did access look like for the audience? And let's see what the responses are. We'll give people just a few minutes. And what I'll say as this is coming in is, I think we are seeing access change. And I know that's a challenge we see with a lot of our clients, where even in a pre-COVID world, they were limited and sometimes on being able to get into the hospital, or in some cases you need to be in the operating room, but that kind of access was being limited. So we'll see what the audience has to say here. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and end the polling and share the results here. So not surprising. And love to hear if this surprises any of our panelists today, but 86% said it was pretty open access, right? So 14% maybe had some limited access. I'm curious from any of our panelists, if you were seeing access change pre-COVID, or if you had limitations on access anyway, was that an issue beforehand for any of our panelists?
Not an issue beforehand.
Okay, so we had pretty open, and in those cases where maybe they're clamping down, maybe there's a they're regulating who can come in or who can call on the physicians. But by a vast majority, 86% said there was open access. So really interesting. So we're going to take then the after picture here. Let me close out of this. And I'm going to launch the second part of this, which is now thinking about what's happened since March, right? How would you describe your level of access to physicians during? Because we don't know what after looks like. We'll talk about that at the very end. But love to hear from the audience. What does it look like now? Were you completely shut down? Is it maybe limited on-site? Is it virtual only? And we'll see how that's changed for the audience. Yeah, people are chiming in here. We'll just give them about 30 seconds here to respond. All right. And, you know, there's a comment coming in the chat, which I think is very relevant. And always on these polls, it's kind of tough. You're like, well, it depends. And as Emily points out, with a global access or global audience, access may vary by country. And I think we're seeing that even by region, right? Depending on which region you're working in, there may be easier access, maybe opening up quicker in some areas than others. So I'm going to go ahead and again end the poll and share the results. So again, maybe not surprising, but 62% said on-site access is limited and 24% says it's virtual only. So, you know, combination of those, we have again, probably 86% that are either doing some virtual or they're having some limitations and 10% can't access at all. So obviously that's a challenge. So love to know who the one person that has open access, that must be nice. But yeah, so any surprises from the difference kind of before to during? Is this consistent with what you're seeing in your groups as well?
Yes, I definitely think so, Ray. And I like the comment there that said there's it's regional. And I think that's really good perspective because, you know, I've been on a lot of webinars recently and there tends to can sometimes be a bit of a group think. Yes, access has been restricted, but it's also nice to remember that it's not a blanket rule and you have to find the areas and proactively find the areas that will allow access. So I think this looks fairly consistent with the medical device and technology industry.
And I would just add to that, John, that besides it being regional, it's also evolving. Every week is different. So, you know, one week we might be making headway and getting face to face, but then a patient comes down with COVID and they have to close the office down, or they lose an employee, or, you know, a lot of things are just constantly changing. So I think it's going to be a hybrid and it's going to continue to evolve. On a weekly basis, quite honestly.
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead, Alistair.
Sorry, Ray. From my perspective, I think I saw a comment in there from Emily who said she's global and it depends by country. And just the Alcon setup, you know, we have folks in different areas, obviously. We have different rep types and different channels that they call on. So we have clinics and ORs. So it really depends. I mean, in the OR space, the access has been a lot more easy to get into at the moment, a lot more open. But once again, it depends on if it's a ambulatory surgical center or hospital. A lot easier to get into the private ASCs versus into the hospital networks. And then the clinics are probably, you know, less likely to let people in at the moment. But once again, very much regional. And just going to give an overview. We think we're probably doing about 30% of what we're doing right now is virtual. The rest is face to face, and that may be very different on the, you know, for Heather and John. But that's kind of how we're looking right now as a just in kind of an overarching number.
No, that's really interesting. And what I'd like to do is, Alistair, maybe you could talk a little bit more and we'll go through each of these and then get into some questions about how you're responding to it. But can you talk a little bit more about how selling has changed? So it sounds like if before it was pretty much open access, now it sounds like you're doing some virtual. How else has that impacted your sales team, you know, specifically over the last 6 months or so?
Yes, I think to your point, Ray, we had complete open access across all rep types, all facilities, clinic or OR. And I think now in the OR space, or and it also actually, you know, even in the rep space, actually depending by region, but I'd say in our, we have three different business units in our cataract, in our surgical business, refractive, cataracts and surgery, and retina. So the cataract team are probably back up to about 85% access. So, and that's, but really strong in the ASC space. And then a lot more virtual happening in the clinic. And then in the refractive space, quite a lot of virtual happening. And then retina, a kind of a good mix of folks really getting strong access into the ORs. But I think so how things have changed is with 30%, probably 30% virtual happening across the whole organization, I think it's helping people be better prepared. So when they do get in to see a customer, they've done some good legwork prior to going in to see the physician. So when they do get to see the person, it's a lot more focused time and, you know, more focused objectives of determined prior to going in, because the time really is limited.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a really good to capture the differences both across the business and across the region. And even, Heather, as you pointed out, the week to week. And we had a client we were working with in virtual training just a couple of weeks ago, and they got word on that call that they now had to provide a current COVID test for their technicians to be able to get in to assist on, you know, surgical procedures or to calibrate the equipment. And, you know, all of a sudden that whole access changed, you know, just with an email. So I think we're running into those kind of things. And if nothing else, we are figuring out how to be creative, how to be flexible, right? How to adapt to some of those things. And maybe that's one of the skill sets going forward. Heather, I'd love to hear from your perspective, you know, how have things changed? And maybe you could share just a few things your team is doing to respond to that.
Sure. And you were just talking about the test, and it just has me thinking of all of our representatives that are having a temperature check before they even walk in an office. You know, that never happened before. And right. Like Alistair, being in ophthalmology, one of the great things about our specialty is just the tremendous relationship that industry has with our physicians. So we have always had this benefit of great access. And I think the difference is for us being clinic-based and glaucoma-based versus what Alistair shared is that things changed dramatically, and especially in the Northeast where I work, where we were hit the hardest. So, I mean, we had people in complete shutdown where in other parts of the country, they may not have experienced that. So it has totally changed our world, but again, it is evolving. I was talking to one of my managers today who he was having great access. He had made it around. He has a new representative, so giving those warm handoffs and introductions was really important. But last week, it wasn't the same. And, you know, one of the things that we're doing is we're making a lot more appointments. The face-to-face interactions may not be, especially if they catch a doctor on a tough day where they're trying to catch up and see a lot of patients that are now coming back into clinic, it may not be as feasible to get that time in the office that we got before. So, yeah, we're having to be more diligent about making appointments so that they can be prepared, as Alistair described. And then virtual for us in the Northeast, we were at about 50-50 for a while. Face-to-face is becoming more and more prevalent, and fingers crossed, we'll continue to keep that going in the right direction.
Right, right. No, that's interesting. And thinking about how important the appointments become, especially in a pharma world where they were probably used to just doing a drive-by, catching them in the hallway, grabbing a cup of coffee, whatever that might have been. And that's now not possible. So being more proficient, it's really a skill set now of how do you reach out with enough value to get their interest? And then how do you make it really easy to book? And whether that's using a calendar tool or, you know, what that script looks like, but getting it on their calendar, right? So they will actually have a opportunity to log in or join the virtual meeting or whatever that looks like. So, John, I'd love to hear from your perspective, you know, a little bit more about how things have changed. And then I know specifically at Arjo, you've done some really interesting things. And we were chatting a bit last week about, you know, leveraging the virtual technology to engage, especially with a durable or a equipment and product in addition to your technology. Maybe you could speak a little bit about what some of the things you're doing to address that.
Yes, well, let's just cast our mind back to February. And back in February, we were organizing a global training. It was a service training for our technicians, and they were all coming to Sweden for a week-long face-to-face training. And Arjo makes specialized medical beds and mattresses, and they make lifting machines, patient lifters for patients as well. So some fairly specialized technical products that we're coming in for training for. And then in February, it started to emerge that maybe we aren't able to travel. And I was getting some emails from the people that were attending saying, oh, we must travel. And then the office was saying, well, actually, we're going to restrict travel. And I just came to the conclusion that this training was impossible. And I was writing back to the participants to say, well, look, unfortunately, we're going to have to reschedule this maybe till June or July, which is subsequently passed. It should be better by then. And they were saying, they kept persisting that in some way, shape or form, we want this training. And I just remember this very clearly. I was saying it was impossible, but 3 weeks later, we were running virtual service training. And we had our service technician who had a workshop set up with a camera. He had flip charts in the background. He had somebody on the camera. And there we were, the camera being handheld as he's taking off the wheel of a bed, and then going around to the head of the bed. And he's talking to the camera all the way through it. And I was sitting there going, 3 weeks ago, I said this was impossible. And here we are running a full service program. Now, it has its limitations. But that really opened that for me. That was really the start of actually realizing that we have to find new ways of doing things. And I think that was the start. And I think we started, I think we were quite, a couple of lessons there was don't wait for things to be perfect. It wasn't perfect. Play around with the platform. And the other thing I think is participants are forgiving. So the people who are on there watching this and engaging it were quite forgiving if it all of a sudden went out of focus. And it was quite humorous to see how they would get it back in focus, the camera back in focus. And people would sort of chip in and chime in with their tips on how to potentially improve that. And so the customers taught us how to actually be in this environment and really listening to our customers and responding to what it is that they need and then figuring out how to do that. That, I think, is the key, this versatility piece, this adaptability piece, and being comfortable with really being uncomfortable in this environment is really important. That's some of my key takeaways.
John, I love that story. And there's one other lesson that I think we've learned, and that is people have to experience it before they get it and before they may be more willing to be a little more agile in how they go about it. They don't know what they don't know until they jump in and try it. So
that's right.
What a major accomplishment. That's awesome.
Well, I was saying it was impossible. We can't possibly run service. Right, we were doing it.
Right. Well, and you have five-year-olds going to school on Zoom, right? So we that would have taken 5 years if somebody said we need an initiative to do that. So now, like you said, there are limitations and challenges. But
yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's a really great insight. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about leveraging virtual and what we're doing. Heather, let's start with you this time. And, you know, one of the things we hear from our clients a lot is, well, we still need to build relationships and rapport. You know, we need to engage with our customers, and certainly we need to close business. So what are some of your top reps, or what are you seeing that they're doing to leverage the virtual technology, and how are they using that as a tool to, you know, build that relationship with the customer? And, yeah, and by the way, just before you respond, sorry, I'm going to chat that in as well. And I'd love to hear from our audience. You've already been super engaged, and I love that. So I'd love to hear from other people who are participating. You know, what are your reps doing to leverage virtual technology? And then we'll hear from the panel as well. So sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, Heather.
No, all good. And actually, I think I have a manager on the line here, Lori Grudai from Pennsylvania, who I think has just, she and her team have done a phenomenal job of taking advantage of the virtual opportunities. That, and we have a marketing team here at Aerie that put together really impressive set of resources. It wasn't a one size fits all. So they were doing market research about how COVID was impacting not only physicians and their practices, but also working with one of the foundations to also understand how it was impacting patients. So we were collecting a lot of information along the way that our marketing team was willing to share in roundtable types of form. And, you know, especially just coming out of shutdown, customers were eager to connect. They really were. They wanted that social connection. They wanted to know what was going on in other parts of the country, other parts of the region. And so Lori and her team really took advantage of that. And we had great participation and attendance very early on from that. So I think that's what the best people have done. I will say what I'm starting to see as of late is there is a little bit of fatigue though for that. So I was talking to my husband about this last night. He's in dermatology, and he said, oh my gosh, I was talking to a physician. He gets 4 invites a day to attend these programs. And so, I think it's going to be really crucial. And John, you said this, you know, really understanding what the customer need is. We're going to have to really continue to focus on that. And how are they willing to engage? And we're going to have to continue to evolve. We're going to have to change what those interactions look like. And it'll be different in November versus what it was in June.
Absolutely. And I think the need to be relevant and bring value is never more important now, right? Or has never been more important than now, that we really need to, if we have a limited amount of access and a limited opportunity, we better be that much more prepared and show up and be super relevant. So Alistair, I'd love to hear, you know, what you're seeing with your team in terms of leveraging technology, leveraging virtual tools. You know, how are they for that 30%, as you said, what are they doing to build the relationship and move those deals forwards?
Yes, I think, thank you, Ray. Yes, so two key things I think I'd like to share with you all is on the one side is on the business front. So it's been something that our sales folks have always done very well is connecting with our customers to make sure they fully understand the commercial programs that we have in place. So a lot of our sales folks have actually been using this time to connect with key decision makers, I suppose, to run through some of the commercial programs. So they really understand how they're positioned, how the programs are running, and how they're taking full advantage of those programs. And I think that's been a real, something that I think our customers didn't know they didn't know, and they really have enjoyed hearing, you know, how they're tracking with our commercial programs. The other one is educational needs. So we've done a lot of education, and I think to Heather's point earlier on, I think a lot of folks are done with that right now, with just the kind of general education, because I think it's very a lot of it is. It can be seen as very self-serving. So we really want to make sure we meet the needs of the customer. And so the other area that we've spent a lot of time on is using virtual tools to connect with OR and clinic staff to help them with their training. So those folks who weren't seeing customers, patients that is, for a while, we wanted to make sure when they came back into the clinic or into the OR that they were ready to go again. Because you can imagine if not having used a piece of equipment for a month, maybe 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, you forget a lot. And so we really wanted to make sure that we had our customers prepared and ready, or the OR folks and clinic people ready and prepared to use the technology, so there weren't any gaps there. And I think one of the things that has kind of transpired from this as well is us conducting virtual calls with our customers has also helped them learn how to do virtual, so they can conduct those same kind of calls with their patients. And I think that's what's come out of it. So our folks have, even though they're in role to be selling Alcon products, a lot of them are spending time becoming kind of virtual meeting instructors and how to run a WebEx or how to run a Zoom call. So that's really one of the interesting things that's materialized from this as well. Just one last thing I did want to share. We use quite a lot of interesting digital kind of training graphic user interfaces in our training organization, and we've actually converted those to be able to be used by customers. So helping people settings, do settings on machines, for example, and be able to show them on a screen, so they're really seeing the screen of the machine in front of them, even though it's on a computer screen, and showing them exactly how to make, to change settings on a machine. So those are some of the creative ways I feel that we're using virtual right now.
No, that's wonderful. And I think one of your comments really resonated, as, John said that sometimes our customers are teaching us, and also as we're teaching our reps, and then they're able to see the technology. One of the things we've seen in our business and in the sales training business is we've been doing virtual instructor-led sales training for over 10 years, and it's always been a little bit of a struggle, at the start to get people on board and to get them engaged and, how does the technology work? And now the idea of turning your video on and chatting and responding, I mean, they're doing it with their families on the weekends, they're doing it with their kids. So in some ways that's lowered the barrier to entry and people are much more inclined. And we get the question all the time, well, how do you get your customers to turn their camera on? And I say, pretty simple, turn yours on and just make it kind of obvious. And I'd say 9 times out of 10, they will then, turn theirs on and engage. So I do think that's been a positive outcome, right? As we're seeing the barrier to entry and the use of the tools. We have some fantastic comments coming in the chat as well about leveraging the technology. I think Vito was the one who mentioned using the tools that are there, so making it more engaging, using video, sharing videos, delivering presentations, keeping the conversation going. I think we really need to think about our presentation, if you will, and how we get that feedback when we're not sitting across the table or we're not, bonding over lunch, right? But how are we doing that so that we keep it very interactive and we're not just flipping slides, which, as we know, people will pretty quickly start checking their email and multitasking. So some really good comments coming in from the group. So I want to shift to another topic that has also been one that we've gotten a lot of interest around. And John, I'll start with you on this because I know we worked specifically on some programs around this related to sales coaching. And I'll give a little bit of the backdrop, which is, coaching, which we believe is always important to improve the performance of the sales team and really help them with their skills and deal coaching to move deals forward. And we heard a lot of, well, we can't do that because we can't go out and ride along with our reps anymore. And I think the inverse of that, the flip side, is we actually have the ability potentially to coach in a different way and even more effectively given the virtual technology. So being able to join a call, being able to watch a video, being able to really engage with them when we maybe can't be there in person. So I think we're seeing some really interesting outcomes from that. But John, I'd love to hear, some of the things you're doing with your managers. And Heather, I know we talked about the coaching mindset and how that's changing. So how are you working with your managers to continue to coach? And what is that looking like for your team, John?
Yeah, well, I think back again in March, we recognized that the typical ride along with a sales manager and a sales representative to greet a customer, well, that environment had changed and it had just changed overnight. And so where we positioned our virtual training was that as a priority, we wanted to train our managers first on this changing environment. So we created a template called Manager Monday. And with Manager Monday, we utilize the services of Ray here and a couple of other providers, both internal and external, to really ensure that the skills of our managers around leadership, coaching, managing pipeline, qualifying customers, even coaching. You know, we spent our first month in March and April was really just about lifting the expectations and lifting the performance of our sales managers to adapt to this environment. And we started with them first. And I think that's a continuing conversation as well. You have some who really rapidly uptake it and they teach us, and others that need some of the reassurance as well. So I think there's a reasonably good mix in there. But that was our priority. It was really to start with our managers first. And it wasn't just to provide education to our customers. I actually think that came last. It was really just about building internal capabilities first, starting with our managers, then infusing that with our sales teams in both service and sales, and then came our customer interactions.
Absolutely. No, and an investment, especially during that time where people are trying to figure out what the new normal looked like, but to sharpen the saw, if you will, and then go out and leverage those skills or start using their skills. So great example. So Heather, maybe you could talk a little bit about, I mean, I know coaching is something near and dear to your heart, and certainly within the farmer world, people have that idea of coaching, but what does that look like at Aerie, and how has that changed for you, you know, over the last few months?
Well, it's changed a lot, but I'm really glad we started talking at the end of the year last year, and the services that SRG provided for us in just doing some initial alignment with a bunch of coaches who had all come from different environments to really talk about the coaching map, that's what I call it, but that mindset, that ability to assess and that ability to plan effectively. You gave us some important language, and coming out of that that training session, we put together a coaching crew, and I'm so glad that came out of our training, because this is a team of managers. Again, Lori, who's on the line, is a part of that coaching crew, and they have helped lead the way in identifying what good should look like, using a lot of the concepts that we were already implementing and taking that now to the virtual world. And I think a lot of it does still apply. And in fact, Lori and I were talking last week after one of her virtual coaching sessions, and she said, you know, the representative actually felt more prepared than ever to go into the office because there was such this investment in the approach and what they were going to do, and that that Lori had invested so much more time in talking all of that through. The rep had more confidence, had a very clear objective. So I think it's forced our managers really to do more of that active listening, because they're not there. They're not there to jump in and direct. So I think they're asking better questions and helping their reps, you know, teaching them how to fish on their own too, which I think is great.
Right, right. No, and I think it does make a difference. And I think it comes through to the reps, right, about that investment. You know, there was a comment in the chat that I just want to call attention to that Mihaela had mentioned, which is, you know, this is an uncertain time for the sales teams, right? So, you know, they're going through a lot of change. Certainly management leadership's going through trying to figure things out, but just that opportunity to check in and say, hey, let's talk about how things are going. How are you prepared? You know, what are you doing to prepare for this call, or what are you excited about? And also, and a common theme is, well, let's talk about expectations, because, you know, back to the week by week, things are changing so rapidly that unrest or discomfort, you know, can really balloon if there isn't that communication. So I think making the excuse, if you will, the opportunity to have that coaching conversation and to check in can pay huge dividends, even if there isn't a whole lot to say. We may not know all the answers. And John, to your point, sometimes you have to be vulnerable and say, yeah, we don't have the answers, but here's where we are today. And I think people appreciate that. So, Alistair, I'd love to get your thoughts on Alcon again. I know you've had a strong coaching culture and a coaching model in place. And how has that evolved over the last 6 months or so?
Yeah, so interesting. I mean, we haven't made any significant changes recently, Ray, but I think one of the a few things that really resonate with me, the one is there's definitely a lot more communication and a lot more connection going on. And I think just from, you know, one of the things that you mentioned here is when you're on these virtual calls, you really let someone into your home, right? You see what, you see the environment they're operating within. And it's, you know, there are a lot of folks with young kids and there's a lot of activity going on. And I think it really enables our leadership to understand what some of our folks are dealing with. It's not difficult to, it's very difficult to separate that yourself from the environment right now. And so I think that's definitely some of the feedback I've had from our sales leadership is they really feel much better connected with their teams in that way, that you really do, you know, see what kind of environment they're operating within. The other one is that that we feel as well, there's been a lot more opportunity to be better prepared from a business acumen standpoint. So there's a lot more preparation going into meetings and being able to coach the team to, because they're often not going into these calls with their teams anymore. They're leaving them to their own devices. So there's a lot more coaching going on up front and a lot more focus on analytics and really being able to have those more business-oriented discussions effectively on their own without being able to, you know, fall back or lean back on the leader potentially.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great perspective to think about what can you do. You know, we talk about pre-call coaching, and then there's, if you can, a joint call or where you're observing and providing feedback. Or, you know, even the Monday morning quarterback coaching, you know, even if you weren't on the call, but you can still use that coaching framework to say, well, Alistair, tell me how that went. What did you like about it? What might you do differently? You know, what are you going to do next time? And I think Lori pointed out in the chat here as well, that virtual coaching allows for more self-assessment and practice with the manager. So again, even if we can't be there, we can invest that time. We can use it to develop a coaching plan. And she mentions things like adapting to DISC or building their confidence. You know, we can still do that even if we can't be there in person. And, you know, frankly, some of those in-person coaching calls might have just been more of a passive ride-along. And maybe we weren't taking the time to really think about the coaching objectives and the outcomes and the things that maybe we wanted to. So, well, this is fascinating. Really great to get everybody's input, especially thinking about different organizations, different geographies, different customers. The last question that I'd like to tee up here, and let's start, we'll start with John and we'll work our way back up this time. What are you doing differently now that you think is going to continue? So in other words, you know, looking for the icing on the cake here, but looking for something that has changed that we really want to capitalize on, and let's keep doing those things that are working. So maybe was there a surprise or an aha? You know, what's coming out of this that you really want to make sure that we keep doing going forward? So John, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think one of the real highlights for me was we ran a customer education series, and we ran six of them back to back just on a weekly series. And we're in the middle of planning another series here. But there was one that was a real standout. We would get a few hundred people on each one of these customer education webinars, and it created a sales channel for the team to actually offer something of value to our customers. But the average attendance was maybe 100 or 200 people, but we had one that was 1,000 people. And that, for me, was a real lesson. And when you can find that piece of that, either that speaker or that piece of information that is valuable for our customers, customers will join you in that conversation. And that, to me, is what we're continuing to search for. What is it that our customers actually need right now? And the beauty of a webinar platform, it enables you to reach a lot of people, and it all gives you seed as opposed to organizing face-to-face conferences and events. And so that, to me, that spike that we saw, it went from 100 or 200 to 1,000, was the real story here, in that it's important to find things that are valuable to our customers. because your customers will tune in when it's available to them. Not necessarily what we think they want. It's what they think they need right at that point in time. So that, to me, is something that we need to not only just deliver in the short term, but that gives it – I think that's something that we need to plan for beyond COVID. That's not just a COVID strategy. I think that is a genuine customer engagement using these tools, a long-term strategy.
Absolutely. No, I think finding out what works, right, and then making sure we're capitalizing and capturing. And, you know, I heard, and we used this on a previous webinar, but I heard the comment, you know, there was BC before Corona, there's DC, which were during Corona or during COVID, and then there's the after Corona or after COVID world. And we don't know what that world really looks like, but we know that we're figuring out, you know, how to evolve right now in the DC world. And let's make sure we're taking those things that are working with us moving forward. And what we do know, and I've seen the research around this, is some of the things like access, and when they've surveyed doctors, they say, you know what, we're not going back to the old way. So there will be additional limitations, or they're using this to kind of thin out the access list or the availability. So I think some of those things we will have to take forward. So Alistair, let me jump up to you, and then we'll finish with Heather. But, you know, is there anything that surprised you or that you've seen that you want to make sure you keep doing or have your team doing going forward?
Yeah, so I think the one thing that John mentioned right at the end there was this digital customer engagement, which is something we've really tried to get our arms around. And I think it's been an interesting messaging to our sales force, because I think it's seen as maybe an either or. And to me, it's an augmentation of the job the sales folks do, the face-to-face job they do. And I think if we can augment that face-to-face piece, if when it comes back, with digital customer engagement, just to make those interactions with our customers, whether it be in the clinic, in the OR, wherever it is, a lot more focused, a lot more meaningful. I think that's going to be good for the industry, for the customer, and for all. So it really is just trying to get our arms around what digital customer engagement really is, because it's really difficult to define. And I think that's what we're really working on at the moment. One of the other things I did want to share on in that space is something that we're doing that seems to work really well. Is being in the training space, is we've really utilized our sales leaders to help us implement this engagement, this digital customer engagement strategy within our sales force. So we're training a much smaller audience, and then we rely on them to go to the divisions or to the smaller groups. So they really have, there's really responsibility and accountability for it themselves. And that's when I mentioned earlier on is trying to get people comfortable with digital customer engagement is utilizing our sales leadership to help message to that more effectively, because they're engaged.
I couldn't agree more, Alistair. And I will say our most successful programs are the ones where the leaders are very involved, that are there sponsoring. We just kicked off a very large program for a technology company up here in Redmond. And we had videos from the executive sponsors talking about how important this was, how they valued the investment, and how they want to make sure that everybody's kind of leaning in, right? I mean, it really set that expectation. And even better when they pop in and join the cohort sessions. So I think that really sets a tone, and you know, it's a best practice, but it may be coming more visible and more obvious, and the value of that's really, really significant. So yeah, great points. So Heather, what else, or what are you seeing? Take forward into the AC, the after COVID world.
Looking forward to AC for sure. but I think similar to what you heard from John and Alistair, I mean, we're doing a lot of thinking about the customer component, but I think there's another key component that I would like to see us continue, and that is our investment in our people and the development of our sales team. So, you know, we took advantage of the shutdown, and it sounds like maybe similar to Alistair, we did a lot of work around business acumen, probably the most thorough business planning we have ever done here at this company, which was great. But we also repurposed DISC. and use that to get our representatives thinking about, in a virtual world or in a world behind a mask, how are you going to effectively communicate with your customers? And we did it in chunks. So kind of like the impossible of, oh, we can't have an all-day training session on this. We put it in bite-sized pieces, and it worked really well. And we continue now to embed that in little pieces going forward. And so I think going forward, AC after Corona, there will be many more opportunities for us to think differently about investing in people, running development in small bite-sized pieces that people can handle. And I think that will be the same with our customers too, right? Keep doing remote, but it'll be in smaller doses.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things that might not have been immediately obvious, but one thing we've seen is all of a sudden there's budget that might have been allocated for travel, for, you know, POAs, the quarterly meetings or sales kickoffs, that is not being spent. Now, certainly budgets are tight and everybody's being conscious of that, but there may be additional funds available, and doing virtual is actually quite cost effective, whether it's on demand with some virtual sessions or large sessions, you know, like John mentioned they were doing. So I think that's really interesting to think about, how can we leverage those investments in other ways. So great point. So there are a couple of questions, and I'd love to open it up at this point. We have a few minutes here before the top of the hour. But the first one, and I'll cover from Roy. Roy asks about conferences. Most, if not all, conferences have been canceled, and how do panelists see conferences playing a role in customer contact in the future? So kind of back to that digital engagement that John and Alistair were talking about. But I'm curious if you have plans for digital conferences, or are there things that you're doing with your team to engage where they might have gone to, you know, a 2 or 3 day conference and been there with their customers?
Yes, I can, John, you carry on.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Alistair. Go.
I was just going to mention on the ophthalmology side, and Heather probably has feedback on this as well, but the governing groups in ophthalmology, the ASCRS and AO, have been very proactive in converting their annual meetings to virtual. And I think the ASCRS meeting that happened, which is big in the cataract refractive space, was very effective. We were heavily engaged. We had a virtual booth. Not many exhibitors did that, because it really was a bit of a rush to get it all done. But I think this, I mean, we were thinking about this probably 10 years ago, and it never happened, because when people really have to change and adapt, then we do. But I think they've been very effective. But there is the revenue piece I don't fully understand, because it's the costs are a lot less to us as exhibitors, just having to build a booth and do all of those good things. So I think they're going to be ongoing discussions with the organizers and the committees to work out how we can still make this a worthwhile exercise for the physicians, the industry. And so it's going to be it's work in progress, but I do think they're going to continue.
No, that's great. And John, do you have a comment as well?
No, I mean, it's just it's something interesting that not all conferences are cancelled, and maybe it's what we're looking at just locally here in Australia is working with one of our long-term care providers that have actually started an art program for people in long-term care facilities, and so they've got them painting. And they've got a collection of paintings. Well, we're using our facilities where they're actually going to put all of these paintings, and we've got hundreds of them around our facilities, and they're inviting some selected people in to use our facility, and we're turning our office into an art gallery. Our customers have had to adapt, particularly in these long-term care facilities with these residents. They've given them some paintings to do, and we've really connected with them in a way that we're using our facilities as what they would typically use as a conference venue. And so it's just finding a completely different way to connect with our customers. And that's not a virtual. So I think my message here is it's actually not a virtual event. That's a really tangible tactical event. It requires a lot of planning now because there's masks and temperature checks and a lot of checks. But it doesn't all have to be virtual either. That was another reminder.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that'll evolve certainly as things open up too, right? But they may be smaller scale or more kind of point of need. And Lori mentioned in the chat as well, seeing things like podcasts going out to customers, you know, versus big, large virtual, or I know we're doing, you know, like virtual happy hours. So it may just be a 1 hour, kind of a very informal thing, but a way of engaging with our customers in a different way. So I think really, really great ideas. And again, ideas from the audience. So I'm going to put all three of you on the spot just by way of wrapping up. We've got a couple of minutes, but we had a question about what competencies will help a rep win. And I'm reading into in the new world. So I'd love to hear, what do you think? It has that changed at all? What are your top things? What would you really like to see reps lean into or work on? You know, what competencies are going to be most important? Heather, why don't I start with you this time?
Gosh, it is all about change agility. I mean, that to me is just the most important thing right now.
That's wonderful. And that's for the managers too, right?
For everybody, all of us.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. Alistair, how about you?
Oh, I think Heather stole the show with that one.
Yeah.
number one answer. Yeah.
I think digital transformation.
Yep. Yeah, I think we need that. That needs to be a new core competency, right? We need to figure out how to get our arms around that. Wonderful.
I think it's a very kind of, it's a real buzzword, but I think it's key. Yeah.
Absolutely. John, how about you?
Yeah, I actually answered this one in the chat. I'm not sure if it came up, but I wrote versatility. Will still remain speed and staying connected to our customers. And I think the really important one is I out of all of that, I think speed is really important. So don't wait to be perfect. Don't wait for the best platform. Don't wait for the best content. I think a competitive advantage in this space is speed. And so embrace some of the clunkiness that might come along with that and take advantage of being first.
Wonderful words of wisdom and a great place, I think, to wrap us up. I think we could probably continue for another hour, but I know people have other places to be, and ideally this paves the way maybe for a round two. So I just wanted to thank all three of you for your insights and for opening up and sharing your stories. This has been fascinating for me, and I know we had just wonderful engagement from the audience today. So again, thank you very much.
The market is changing, making sales skills more important than ever before. How to transform your team into peak performers? If you want the answer, plus free resources for podcast listeners, visit salesreadinessgroup.com/podcast.